Well, of course, you recognize that as the classic straight no chaser, a tour de force by several jazz greats, including John Coltrane on tenor sax, Miles Davis on trumpet, Julian Cannonball Adderley on alto sax, Red Garland on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, and Philly Joe Jones on drums. This is from Miles's 1958 album, Milestones. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, with a little something going on here. I think I have a sore throat or something is happening, but it will clear up. And if it doesn't, well, we just go along with the program until it does. And it's an incredible situation with the month of March. The month of March isn't being very kind to many people across the country, with blizzards and rain and snow and sleet and all manner of calamity weather-wise. Many have died, as so far I think that the toll is up to 24 because of the weather. It would have been something to hear a note of condolence or two from the president about it, but you know, that's why he's Donald Trump. He's a guy with no heart. Well, I want to talk about a couple of things today. We're going to touch on briefly on some of these subjects because, as we have been doing, because we would run out of time if we were to do each as a separate topic, you know, occupying the entire time that we have. So we will, you know, go down the list of a couple of issues that I think are important to discuss, if and see how many of them we can dispatch. No rush, because they all are important to understand. I hope you understand what we're trying to accomplish here, and that is to raise our awareness, not so much about what they are doing, but what we have to do. This is the point. Most of the news coverage that I'm seeing are talking about what they are doing, what the politicians are doing. And that's good because you need that kind of information. But we started off this entire program from the very beginning. It is about discussing what we should be doing, how we should be preparing for ourselves a working alternative, or at least what we should know about these systems that are presented to us as perfect and working, and we should adopt them without questioning, and we, you know, we would be well served if we just gobble up whatever the media says. No, we are into independent thinking and analysis because it helps us to situate ourselves much better in terms of where we are going, what our plans are, what we see as a logical route to the big word survival. Well, the first thing I want to start off with today is a kind of chilling, a chilling statement made by Russia. And the chilling statement is that Russia again emphatically committed itself to protecting the interests of Venezuela. We had the leader of the National Assembly, this guy who announced himself as the new president and leader of Venezuela. Guaido, Juan Guaido, He's returning to Venezuela today, but he is ramping up his call for people supporting him outside of Venezuela and inside of Venezuela to emphatically state their opposition to Nicolas Maduro, the duly elected president of the country and successor to a whole new way of thinking in Venezuela, a whole new style of leadership. This really doesn't have much to do with, you know, the charismatic nature of leaders. It has to do with the fact that Venezuela is a sovereign state. I had said this from the very beginning, before all of the tralala started to occur in U.S. media. It is a sovereign state. And Nicolas Maduro, from that perspective, is the legitimate president and leader of the country. But we had President Trump deciding that he didn't like Maduro. He doesn't like Maduro for Venezuela. He has different ideas about who should be president of the country. And so he began a vitriolic attack, not only encouraging Venezuelans to rise up and overthrow Maduro, but also stating emphatically that the United States is behind the opposition leader, Juan Guaido, 100%. In fact, that was the statement of Vice President, whatever his name is. You know. He says that the United States is behind Guaido 100%. This is very frightening because in the meantime, they are attempting to silently amass U.S. troops in Venezuela under the guise most recently of sending in humanitarian aid. Well, everybody knows that, of course, humanitarian aid is desperately needed. But it is highly suspected that the humanitarian aid will mask or will attempt to mask the inflow of weapons to civilians and even to the military. And consequently, President Maduro has rejected or refused to allow unregulated inflow of so-called humanitarian aid. So that was quashed. The people are no doubt suffering terribly in Venezuela. Sanctions have been put on Venezuela's most important strategic resources, including its oil. It has one of the largest reserves of oil in the world. So we see an interest by the United States in Venezuela for any number of reasons. But we should be questioning as Americans why the president is allowed to do the things that he is doing and to say the things that he's saying, inciting rebellion, encouraging the overthrow of a duly elected president, continuing to up the ante by imposing more and more sanctions against Venezuela to choke it, really, to choke it to death so that it has no way of doing business. Now, in the breach, we have two superpowers, China and Russia, who have taken an interest in this development, and both have agreed that it should not continue. and that the United States is acting illegally. They have taken this case to international arenas, saying the international community has to restrain and forbid the United States from further escalations, which are continuing. Trump has not stopped. He clearly aims to destroy the Maduro government, and he clearly aims to cause internal conflict that also will lend a great deal of effort to destroying Maduro. Now, the terrible thing is that the people, regular people, are caught here in the bind, and they have no power, really, except, you know, by showing up in the streets and doing what they can. But they are super hungry. They're starving. And this, too, is being used as a weapon against them, instigated by the United States, so that people in Venezuela will come to so despise the government that they will have no trouble at all in siding with the guy who, Guaido, who nominated himself and appointed himself as ruler. Nor would they have trouble going along with the U.S. program for Venezuela, which is, of course, to destroy Venezuela. The situation is getting worse by the day. The so-called aid has been blockaded outside the borders of Venezuela, hasn't been moved in because of the concern that the aid issue is really a ruse to bring in the weapons, to arm the people against the government, to arm the military against the pro-Guaido military forces, to arm them against the military forces that are trying to hold it together. So it's a very bad situation. Why this is important is not only because, first of all, it's wrong. On every level you can think of, it is wrong. We have, it seems, very little movement or even interest by the international community to emphatically denounce the United States for doing this. It defies all of the laws and rules of etiquette and behavior of countries, one to another. But it also encourages a spread, a true conflagration of conflict. And this is what this is where Donald Trump thrives. He creates conflict. He is all about conflict. His own administration is in total daily conflict. And by getting people to focus on conflict rather than the issues and rather than the responsibility of the United States for stoking the fires of another regional war, instead, he's hoping that he comes across as a very resolute leader, you know, emphatically in favor of U.S.-style, quote, democracy, unquote, and that there surely will be no upheaval, no voices raised in opposition to him within the United States, let alone in the region. So it is a very serious matter. We have had other countries come forward and support the government of Venezuela, but they too, they're running out of money. They don't have much money to begin with. So their support is mostly moral support. The big guys on this trend of supporting truly supporting Venezuela, China and Russia. who are the counterweight to whatever the U.S. plans to do. And it has already done a lot, subjecting the people of Venezuela to extreme hardship. And other governments that are sympathetic, they may be sympathetic, but they're limited in what they can do. They don't have the financial resources to finance a full-fledged, out-and-out support. So this is what everybody's watching. This is what everybody's watching. So now with the return of Juan Guaido to Venezuela today, having done a kind of tour of the region, glad-handing other leaders who see the U.S. leadership role and believe that they will reap the benefits of U.S. support if they in turn support Guaido and his crazy just occupation of the high office. The military so far are hanging with Maduro, and some have defected. Some of the military people have defected to the other side. This is it's a nasty situation. A lot of it, nonetheless, promulgated and promoted and being stoked by the United States to cause utter and complete confusion. Nobody's in doubt that the end game here is to install somebody that they like, the U.S. likes, and that would be Guaido, to install him as the new leader of Venezuela, because the resources of the country can lead to spectacular progress and success for the United States, because it's a lot of money coming from oil sales and the derivatives of that, bank accounts and so forth, and gold. So we have a nasty situation on our hands, and I'd like to start there today. If you have some thoughts about it, the urgency, well, of course, this is a carnival, and throughout the region is Carnival Monday, and tomorrow will be Carnival Tuesday, which is a national holiday. It is no accident that this kind of distress is occurring within this atmosphere, because people are likely to be more agitated. They're likely to be out in the streets more. They're likely to be more persuaded. And certainly they can be used as fodder between any conflict that arises between the Guaido forces and those supporting the current government. I want to know what you're thinking about this. We've talked about it a bit, but it is developing to such a degree that it causes me to be really, really concerned. I fear that this is going to lead to some kind of war. And if it starts out, all it needs is a little tinderbox to start it. And the entire region is going to be involved simply as a matter of self-protection. Venezuela, for example, is just a stone's throw away from Trinidad, which is a major oil refining country. So, it wouldn't take long to overthrow the government of Trinidad by well-armed forces. So you see the ripple effect that will happen, and in the end, the United States would be able to lay claim to the entire region. It would have that much power if it defeats any attempt at all by the Maduro government to protect its sovereignty. This is a major problem. We're not seeing too much coverage or in-depth coverage of what's going on. And that is because the media themselves are conflicted. They have a vested interest in how this is going. And for them, too, it is ideological. Maduro is a leftist, a socialist, as was his predecessor and mentor. And they are reviled, both of them. And again, this is very handy for Donald Trump, because on an ideological level, if you could use that word in connection with Donald Trump, his ideology is really other people's money. But it raises that specter. This is a very important element in going for Venezuela. The idea that the U.S. is actually trying its best to stop the spread of communism. So it's a very complicated situation. Let me hear what you're thinking. 888-874-4888 before we move on to another subject. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Good day, Eugene.
Hello.
Hello.
Good day to you.
Yeah, how are you? Good to be talking with you. This is a subject I've been following for quite a while, and I have several takes in it. And plus, I also have some comments in much of your statement. First of all, I'm hoping that, and I'm believing that, Russia is saying to America, what you did to Libya, we're not going to allow you to do to Venezuela. And I say that because I watched the speech of Putin, and he decried America for invading Libya. And he actually outrightly said it was wrong what you did to Libya. And so I'm hoping that he's also saying that Russia and China will match the USA bullet for bullet, bomb for bomb, and saying that you will not walk away with the spoils of this particular place. And also saying to them that we must stem your arrogance and your imperialist behavior. In reference to Trump outright attitude towards this, we must remember that Trump is just doing outrightly what Obama and the Bush administration did. The Bush administration literally tried to overthrow Maduro, and Obama had put sanctions on Venezuela at the very time he was talking about opening up some relationships with Cuba, which was so diametrically opposed. And in reference to what you're saying about the world community, let's not forget that Macron of France, Merkel of Germany, the Canadian Prime Minister, the Prime Minister of England, they all said they supported Trump's move, which means that what they're saying is that the only thing we hate about Trump is that he shows our hands, our cards, because Trump is just doing outrightly what the others did hypocritically. So I think we should, on this matter, we should see that Trump is no different from the previous. It's just that it's just like in America, where in the South, you know outrightly that they are racist, where in the North, it's hard to discern who's the racist and who's stabbing you in the back. So, and if we look at Trump like that, then we will not curse him any more than we curse the rest. So,
where you're going. I just wanted you to shift gears a little bit because it's mm-hmm. obvious. I just finished talking about it. You're talking about it also, but in greater detail. The question at hand is, what is to be our position? And what do we do? What are we doing?
We should support Russia's and China's backing position. That's what we should do. And this should also show us
how. How do we do that?
By voicing our opinions. I mean, We don't have guns, etc. We should start educating people as much as possible in our on one-on-one basis. Whenever we encounter anyone and we hear them talking ignorantly of the present situation, we should inform them as to what is going on. We should tell them about the sanctions that has crippled Maduro's hands and which is causing the situation down there, and that it's not Maduro who is doing it. We should educate the people. And just like when we protest against the Vietnam War, we should protest against the U.S. invasion. And if the U.S. insists on going there, then we should say we back Russia and we back China, because what they're doing is wonderful. It's good. It's commendable.
How do we say that? Because, as you know, this is a very time-sensitive issue. It may be too late. We are probably out of time.
Well, I have been doing that for quite a while now. I have been posting things on Facebook, etc., on this matter, and I keep posting things on Putin's speeches, which very, very few people respond to, actually. They respond to other things, but stuff like that, because people are so miseducated about Putin, calling Putin a devil, which he's not. And if he's a devil, he's less of a devil than the devils here.
So I come back to the central question. Where does that leave? There's this huge hole that needs to be filled right away that addresses the acute situation in Venezuela, which is now...
Maybe we should write to our congressmen. Hello? We should reach out to our congressmen and senators and voice our opinions. We should reach out to our senators and congressmen and mayors and governors, etc., and tell them that we stand firmly against this. You know, we who know better, that's what we should do. I mean, it's just like every other situation like this. What did we do when the U.S. was invading Libya? What did we do? You know, and what should we have done? We are supposed to do now what we should have done when they invaded Libya. We are supposed to do now what...
But it's not happening. You know, that's the point. It is not happening.
I think it is happening. You bringing up this is an initiation of it. And me and you talking about this, it's happening. We must remember, it's like the raindrops. You know, sometimes we only get a drizzle, but sometimes we get a torrential downfall, you know, so... but we still do what we have to do. We do our part. We don't know how much our part will yield, but we still do our part.
All right. Well, you got us started on that. Let's share where it goes from here. Tony from Florida, you're on the air.
Hi, Richard. Taking my call.
Hello. Thank you for calling in.
I think you pretty much laid out the whole scenario as far as what's going on in Venezuela. It's basically capitalism versus communism. It's what we're seeing. And as in this country, the United States of America, is a capitalist country. So expecting any political figure in this country to speak out against what's going on in Venezuela, you're not going to hear it. Even from somebody as far left as... Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, okay? Because at the end of the day, people, you know, these politicians, they talk the talk, but they do not walk the walk. The only thing regular citizens, if you are, in this particular case, in favor of the Maduro government, the only thing you can do to support that is either join a communist party, move to Venezuela, or move to Russia. That's the way I see it.
Well, that does not necessarily solve the problem. It gets people moving from one place to the other. But you have to stand and fight where you are, which is the United States, which is in the wrong. It is absolutely wrong.
And we know, on principle, they are wrong. But in the fundamentals, what we are seeing, like you just laid out, it is the capitalist countries. If you look at who is for Maduro and who is against, it's capitalist countries versus socialist countries. That's what you're seeing play out right now, okay? It's a struggle between capitalism and socialism in the world. The way the United States sees it, they take out Venezuela, it becomes a domino effect in Latin America and possibly over in the other continent. But as far as here...
What are you saying about the immediate situation? I mean, yes, we can see the dynamic, the capitalist versus the socialist dynamic. I get that. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, I believe this is going to be wrapped up, and the real war, the physical war, will begin very shortly. And it will envelop a good portion of the entire region. And what are the ways that we can forestall it or prevent it from happening? The president came, I've never seen something like this, where the president, the sitting president of the United States, declares war. And is waiting for the rest of the country to do, fall in line and do what it is he sees as being the best way to kill a country.
But this isn't the first time that a sitting president has done that. This isn't the first time that a president of the United States has went to war without the consent of Congress. This isn't the first time. This president has already been set in the past. That's why it's so easy for him to do that, and nobody says anything about it. This is a capitalist country. Anywhere they can capitalize, that's what they're going to do. They're going to capitalize on that. Okay, if there's money to be made, which there's big time money to be made after they destroyed it in Venezuela. It's the same thing what they want to do in North Korea. Okay, after they destroy that economy, bring it to its knees, then they come in there and say, oh, guess what? We can make you rich. We can bring in all this American investment, and everybody can be happy, joy, joy. That's capitalism. That's what we're seeing. And like I said, if you live in this country and you expect something to be done about that, you're living in the wrong place.
Well, I am expecting some kind of outcry from elected officials in Washington and the people, but we're not getting that.
The politicians are the biggest capitalists that we have in this country. They look at the salary that they make, okay? And it's the first term that they're done, they're millionaires, all of them. All of them. Look at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, for example. She's already getting paid, okay? Living in luxury apartments and things like that, okay?
Well, that's not true, by the way.
Look at Bernie Sanders is a millionaire. How many big houses does he have? I mean, these are socialist
Be very careful not to repeat the propaganda that you're getting. Here's a man, he's 77 years old. He has worked all of his life. He saved his money. Mm-hmm. He's invested well. Why is that a crime?
Because it's capitalism. Capitalism, in the eyes of socialists, is a crime.
But we are missing the point here. The point is that he hasn't broken a law. He has a history of being progressive. We may not like the level at which he expressed that progressiveness, but certainly you can't say that Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are of the same ilk. So we're getting enmeshed in issues that are not helping us understand the situation. Don't get angry at Bernie Sanders.
No, but what my point is, I'm not trying to compare Bernie Sanders to Trump. Trump is Trump. Bernie Sanders is Bernie Sanders. Socialism.
We don't know the circumstances under which he acquired three homes or owns three homes. And it is not illegal, as we understand it, to own three homes, as I said.
In a capitalist society.
Well, it's not just about capitalism. We don't know the fundamental details. And even if we do, are we now saying that anybody who owns three homes is a traitor?
No, but anybody that owns three homes is obviously living beyond their means. Or beyond,
how do you know these things? This is what I'm saying. We can't go by the same standards of the people who are expressing these things out of just pure hatred. You don't know whether he inherited the house from his grandfather or his uncle. We don't know these things. We should be concerned not so much about the fact that he owns three homes, which he's paying for, I assume, but that we should be concerned about what his contribution has been as a legislator. That's what we ought to be. Instead, we get, you know, next thing you would get upset about, you know, Ocasio-Cortez, and they're building the case about her materialism, and it does not apply. She's not living a luxurious life.
She's, I'm sure, living a lot more luxurious life than I am.
Well,
and if
whose
you're
fault
tell
is
me
that?
Listen, Utrice, if someone's going to tell me how to live my life, they better show me by example, not by words.
But nobody's okay? telling you, no, so far, nobody's telling you how to live your life.
Oh, many people
and try to tell you to live your life.
And
the things that they're telling you, which is important about how you live your life, nobody's listening to that. It is important, for example, in this situation, to live your life according to your own words, according to your own feelings, and according to your own blueprint. A country is about to be enmeshed and attacked, enmeshed in war, an unjust war, a vicious attack. You're talking about millions of people. 3 million plus people have already left the country. It is a dire situation. So in this particular situation right now, what's important to talk about? Who has three cars or who has two houses, or how the heck do we encourage the people? What can we do to fight this U.S. unilateral action that is causing and creating immeasurable confusion in the region? That's what we ought to be talking about.
But these three houses and three cars is exactly the problem what you're seeing in Venezuela, okay? In a country like Venezuela, the problem, part of it is the United States, but the other part of it is Maduro. He's not Chavez.
No,
the reason there's so many Venezuelans that are against him is because
again,
he is not Chavez.
Your focus is off. Your focus is off. First of all, this is not typical life in Venezuela. The average Venezuelan is a worker. And even as a worker, they were able to take care of their families. They were able to take advantage of, at least since Hugo Chavez, they were able to get a lot of government-subsidized services that they used to have to pay for. There still is the matter of slavery and trenchant racism in Venezuela. So they can't solve all the problems at the same time. So they were tackling the most urgent problems to take care of. And that's what Chavez did. And that's what Maduro is attempting and has attempted to do as a mentee of Chavez.
And but how is it that he became president as a mentee? You see, that's the whole problem in Venezuela, is that, this is my right-hand man, and all of a sudden, when this person dies, he becomes president.
But he was elected. There was a process, a democratic process, and he was elected.
And that's
here
what
you have a president
being contested.
A president who seems to want to run the United States into bankruptcy like he did with several of his businesses. And he decides, of course, being encouraged to do so by his by people we don't see. But they have their eye on Venezuela's oil, Venezuela's gold, Venezuela's resources.
They
and
do.
Trump aims to conduct a war.
With the help of internal forces in Venezuela. There is dissent within Venezuelan politics, Eutrice.
Of course.
They do
where
not
is
want
in,
Maduro.
Where, you tell me, where is there not dissent in any country?
Exactly, but they are fighting that. The difference in Venezuela is that if you, those politicians, there's so many politicians there that have been jailed for speaking out against the government, okay? Before his presidency, before the last presidential election, a lot of his opposition was jailed, okay? Now, do we see that in this country? I don't. We don't lock up. I mean, we don't see that. The only person that I see
but
that they're
being,
trying to lock
I
up
think,
is Donald Trump.
I don't want to use the word. I'm reluctant to use the word, but we are being simplistic now in our analysis. This is a very complex situation. You have
it is
had
complex.
Only a short time for a country to attempt to put itself back on track. It has had to deal with enormous resistance and conspiracies among other countries. They all want what Venezuela has because it has the largest oil reserves in the world. So let's go past what, you know, who has two houses and who has three houses. Let's get past that. And let's see the bigger picture here. The bigger picture is that the United States is provoking and has no trouble admitting it. It is provoking a war. It has an agenda. And the agenda is not just provoking a war. The agenda is to acquire, I'm using a nice word for stealing, to acquire the resources of another country. As if the United States is doing such a great job of managing its own resources. It isn't. So why is it that we cannot resist the presidents of this country and the elite, the power elite of this country? Why do they continue to do this? And why is there, look at what is happening, the enormity of what is happening. And we don't see any movement by outside forces, that's us, in taking this matter to the people and emphatically stating where we stand. We're not saying it. We're not making it known where we stand.
Retreat, that's a very good question, but that's a question that needs to be asked to the most progressive candidates right now that are running for president.
Now forget the candidates. The candidates are singular people. Forget the candidates.
They're the ones who
I'm
are going to have the opportunity
us.
To make
Where?
Those decisions, though. Those are the people that will have the opportunity to turn around policy, Retreat.
They're not going to do it without evidence that the masses of people are thinking very differently from the way they're thinking and giving them reason to rethink what they're thinking.
Beatrice, people in this country, okay, for the most part, have been sick of invading other countries for whatever reason, socialism, terrorism, whatever the reason has always been, people have always been sick of it, Beatrice. Everybody knows that our infrastructure is crumbling.
They're not sick of it with Donald
here.
Trump. They seem to be bearing up pretty well to the threats, the daily threat of escalation. I have no problem with it. And that goes even for progressives. I see no movement in Congress as a body that agrees across the board, whether you're left of center, right of center, dead center. There is no discussion of this. And if you want to, you know, they're talking about impeachable offenses. I would say this qualifies as an impeachable offense, that a president runs off on his own and essentially puts in motion a war. Except this is not going to be an ordinary war. We have China and Russia coming against the United States. This is not a simple matter. This is not trivial stuff. And we don't hear this as a daily discussion in the United States, that we have a renegade rogue president being run by people we don't even know or see, telling him what to do. Even his own generals, in fact, he complained that his generals are more ideological than anything else. What the? And we are living in a country where we have deluded ourselves that, well, it wouldn't come to that. This one will not happen. But the wheels are turning, and it won't be long before we see the conflagration. And it once it happens, once it starts, it is not going to be stopped until there is utter and complete destruction. And I don't know how we get to the point of thinking, well, it will work itself out. No, it will not work itself out. Thanks a lot, Tony, for calling in today. Clara from Philadelphia, you're on the air.
Hello, Yitri.
Hello.
I hope you're well today.
Thank you. Yeah.
I feel your frustration all the time, and I think about this situation and the non-reaction of the people, and not only non-reaction, people supporting it. I've even had people close to me say, "Oh, why shouldn't we go down and get that oil?" I cannot understand. I do think I understand it, but emotionally it's hard. I think the main problem. With the American people is that the people in general believe that the people who are running things, the rich people, the people that, as you say, we don't see, deserve what they have. And at some point, we'll all get what they have. They've bought, I think, into the notion that the people who are rich deserve to be rich, and any one of us could if we only tried. I think that's the basic thing. And I think that notion might, in some ways, it's related to the history of slavery. You know, you get what you want, you take what you want, and you're a hero. But here it is. The question of Venezuela is an old one. Like the first caller I heard who was talking about Bernie Sanders and Cortez having all this money. And I understand, I agree with him. They have no right to have all that money. They got that money mostly on the backs of us. We're paying them fantastic salaries. They have all kinds of benefits. They make laws to benefit themselves and leave us out. I think we have to go to the root of it, like the system that lets those people do what they want. They don't listen to us. I feel helpless. What can I do? I have no one to go to in Congress. They're all together in this for their own personal enrichment.
But
Cortez, a woman in California, all of them.
I understand your point. I disagree, because I think we get entrapped in looking at the wrong things. Even as we speak, we have no idea, really, how they got to be living the way they're living. We have no idea. They may be in greater debt than you and me. All right.
We have some idea, are you trees? Lobbyists, payoffs.
We have no firm proof that they, in one way or the other, are living like the privileged class of America. That's not true.
So we have to be careful
not to overgeneralize, because, you know, it is an awful thing when you bring yourself down to the point of saying, well, I don't need to know the details. I could only surmise, I could only extrapolate that this is how it's going on in their lives. But if I still say, we see no action really from the communities that call themselves progressive, even radical.
Those people,
they're not saying anything. They're not protesting. They're not encouraging community talks on this. They're doing nothing.
Culturally, this is appropriate for the United States. They believe the way the leaders believe when it comes down to the brass tacks. They are benefiting, most of them, from this system. The only people who aren't are the people who are hurting the most. Black people, brown people, poor white people. And they do everything they can and successfully to keep us apart. And they're successful. Until they become unsuccessful, we're going to be in the same situation until this system crashes.
So what has
That's
to
my
happen?
Opinion.
We have to. What? We will now hear from the news media that cluster bombs are being dropped over Caracas, or that X number of children in the nursery schools were bombed while trying to just learn their ABCs.
Yes.
Is that what has to happen?
That's what's going to
and
well,
we
could very
and
well
we are
happen.
The enlightened leaders. We are saying nothing. I can't.
This is the way of this country. I'm saying, this is the way of the United States. The way the people think. It's the way of the culture. I keep harking back to the way it started by theft, deception, murder. It never was acknowledged as something, what should I say, substantially basic in our culture and dealt with. It's never been. This is
the
same thing.
The new way of thinking, which was, popularly promulgated all over the place, is that it's a new day and people are seeing things differently. And they're holding the government to account and they are changing their ways of doing and thinking about things. But here we have, it's been months now, if not longer, that this situation has developed. It is now at a critical point. And it will not turn out well.
Well,
and
the American
during
people,
the time that people had a chance to at least voice your opinion, get organized, and it's my constant complaint. We are refusing to organize ourselves.
Right. Because there's an individualistic attitude toward everything. I'm doing fine. That kind of thing. It's not touching me. That's the attitude in general, I believe, from what I've heard and what I've seen even in my lifetime. It's not about anybody else.
Here you have an opportunity to really express a couple of things all at the same time. This is not the way the president should operate. This is not the way that Congress should allow the president to operate. Here is a country trying to, crawl out of colonialism and imperialism and all the other isms that you could think of. It has had only, in the past 10 years, only one leader who has tried to initiate it and another leader who is trying to do his bit. Granted, nothing is perfect, but you can't tell me that it rests easy on the conscience that a president we know to be unstable, we know to be a liar, we know to be unfit for office, unilaterally has decided that what we need to cheer us up is a nice little war with Venezuela.
Well, could I say one more thing? Listen, as far as Trump is concerned, look at the system that allowed him to become president. That's, I'm saying, oh, we have to go to the roots of this catastrophe we're living through.
But we've got to start, Clara, somewhere. And we have no accountability at a moment like this. We choose not to account for ourselves. We choose not to involve ourselves. We choose to side, even by our silence and inaction, with the wrong side.
Well,
so I
believe
I'm getting close to the point of telling progressives, take a hike. Because you have no commitment when it comes to it.
Yes, exactly. I think if anything changes in this system, basically, it'll come from the bottom. I'm living the way I advise other people. I do not support this system. I buy only the bare necessities. I've gotten my budget down to below ever I thought it could be. And if more of us did,
that's an individual choice. I'm saying there appears to be an almost total absence of collective action.
I know. I agree.
I don't want anybody preaching to me about what progressives ought to do. They're doing nothing.
Not in
this situation, and it is at critical point. It is at critical point. It's not going to get better. It's only going to get worse.
No, it's going to get worse.
That's it.
The people don't believe it's going to touch them. That's a delusion.
They don't think it's going to happen. Thank you, Lincoln and Tony and Clara and others who called and contributed. This thing, I tell you, I don't like the idea of even thinking about it, but we can't avoid it. Nor should we sit by and watch the people who can do something about it, even if it's just a statement. Some kind of recognition that the country, this country, is all wrong. And who do you think, if there's a war, whose sons and daughters are going to go to the front line? Anybody named Trump? Not at all. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.